Marvel Comics came from the minds of primarily three individuals: Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko. Most Spider-Man stories, when you come down to it, are stories about responsibility. Most Fantastic Four stories are stories about the importance of family. Iron Man stories are about we can always strive and improve. Captain America stories, he believes in the essence of America, the can-do spirit. If you want to know who Stan Lee was, look at Peter Parker, look at J. Jonah Jameson, look at Flash Thompson, look at Aunt May. They were all Stan Lee. How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm very, very excited to have you on our show.
Pleasure is all mine, sir.
Whereabouts are you calling from, Tom?
New York City.
Oh, I was in...
Where are you?
I'm in Sydney, Australia. Always wanted to check out New York.
I've had a couple of, invites to Australia. I've never actually made it, though.
Yeah, because I know in Australia we've done, every year we have sort of big sort of comic book related, Marvel superhero related expos, and I guess you were probably invited to some of them.
Yeah, over the years I've pretty well been invited to most places, but I can't go to everything, and what are you going to do?
Tom. Thank you for your time today. How I first found out about you, I think I've always been a huge Marvel and comic book fan. I was sort of going through YouTube and I was going down a rabbit hole of like, I was watching the movies and I saw how they were based on certain comics. And then I'll dig into those comics and I learn about authors and writers. And you're one of the names that would consistently pop up. And that's sort of how I found out about you. Ever since that, I wanted to talk to you because I want to see the origins of where the Marvel comics came from.
The Marvel Comics were in existence long before I came around. What we think of as Marvel Comics came from the minds of primarily three individuals: Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko. Those are the primary three that Kirby and Stan came up with the Fantastic Four, and later the X-Men and the Avengers and a bunch of other characters. And Stan Lee and Steve Ditko came up with Spider-Man. Ditko primarily came up with Doctor Strange on his own. That was kind of the start of the so-called Marvel Universe. At the time they started the whole thing, Stan and Jack had been through the birth and death of superheroes, I think, two or three times already. As Stan often told me, they were hoping to get maybe 2 years out of superheroes. It never occurred to them that how many years are we? We're like 70 years later, that they'd still be around. Because they didn't think it was going to last, they weren't paying too much attention to who created what and, who came up with the initial idea to what or blah, 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 blah. And thus, these days, you have guys who believe that Jack Kirby created everything and Stan Lee didn't do anything. And that you have other guys who believe that Stan Lee created everything and, Jack was just the artist. And as someone who has co-created a lot of characters, I can tell you that, they both did it together. Jack, came up with the visuals and came up with very exciting visuals and was a fabulous storyteller, fabulous plotter. But a lot of Stan Lee's dialogue is what made us fall in love with the characters. I have often thought that the most important contribution that Stan Lee gave to comic books was he brought soap opera into comic books. He made us care about Peter Parker's personal life as well as Peter Parker. Who was he dating? How was he going to screw up that date? The Fantastic Four, he really made it seem like a real family in terms of the way they squabbled and spoke to each other. And that soap opera aspect, I think, is something that, really hooked people in because they wanted to say, Thor's Thor was dating Jane Foster, and Thor's dad said, "Hey, can't you hang out with a nice Asgardian girl? What are you doing with this Earth girl?" And we've all had things like that where our parents, disapproved of what we were doing. And then when at a time when I worked on Thor with a fabulous artist by the name of Ron Frenz, he's the real creative genius in our partnership. But I used to tell Ron that, when you think of Thor and Odin, you got to think of an old deli guy. "Hey, I've got a nice little deli. We're going to take care of Asgard. This is our family business. We're going to just take care of Asgard." And Thor says, "But Dad, I think we should franchise. I think we should take care of the planet Earth. And if there's a problem on Saturn, we should help that and expand our horizons." No. Let's stay with the family business." And that's how I used to look at Thor.
When it comes to characters like Thor, Spider-Man, aren't there like five, six different versions of that character, different timelines, different writers? How does Marvel Comics organize all that?
Well, I'm not sure how they do it today, but back in the day when I worked at Marvel, we had a couple of guys who kept track of where all the characters were. And I used to think that consistency was very important. In those days, I used to say our audience is 16-year-olds of all ages. Both, children who are much less, younger than 16 and dreamed of that magic day, and people who are older than 16 but also enjoyed that magic day. And I thought the younger kids, which is where we were aiming most of our stuff, I wanted to keep that market. Today they're focused more on the adult market, but I think that's a mistake, because I think that when you're 12 years old, you have an unlimited source of income. It's called your parents. When you're 25, 26 years old, you have bills to pay. Every time you're buying something, you question, can I afford this? Should I buy this? When you're, like I say, 12 years old, you have a dollar in your pocket. You can spend that whole dollar because your parents will, give you another one. We don't have that luxury. I've always said that, money becomes finite once you discover either sex or cars. That's when it becomes finite, because suddenly you're thinking about dates, suddenly you're thinking about filling up that gas tank. But before then, you have that unlimited source.
Tom, how did you, what things could you do, or what things did you guys do to give that 16-year-old kid, those 12-year-old kids, the best reading experience possible? Because just talking to you for these few minutes, I can tell that you're really focused on sort of leaving a memory, a feeling. What things could you do to sort of really do that?
Well, I believe a comic book has one of two values. If it reaches you on some emotional level or intellectual level and sticks with you, then it's a priceless comic book. And if it doesn't, it's valueless. I always looked at it as a writer that it's my job to convince you that these characters are real and that their emotions are real and that the agonies we're putting them through, that these are real things that are happening. And my artist, again, I speak of Ron Frenz, and there are a lot of other guys, Pat, Paul Ryan, Pat Olive, Ron Lim. I would talk to these artists, and we would have hour-long conversations about the characters and what they were going through and what they were feeling, because we cared about these characters, but it was our job to pour a lot of misery on these characters. Because the more miserable their lives were, the more interesting it was to you as the reader. I used to get a lot of complaints when I was at Fantastic Four from readers. They were saying, "Oh, so many terrible things happened to these guys. Can't you cut them a break? Can't you have an issue where nothing bad happens to them?" And he used to say, "Wait a minute. Every month There are 29 days between issues where nothing bad happens to him, because nobody wants to read a comic book where the character is just, blithely going through the day and nothing bad is happening. We want to feel that, well, we don't want to feel, we care about these characters. So we sympathize with them when they're going through their misery. And like I say, it's my job to make them very miserable. Giving a nice emotional gut punch to every story. I've always believed that stories are important to people. Because in a story, everything matters. Every sentence matters. Everything that occurs in the story has to have meaning. And there's a beginning, middle, and end. And the real stories tell us something about the human condition. I mean that, whether it's a comic book story or a short story or a piece of literature or a caveman drawing on the wall, it tells us something about the human condition. And that's why we turn to stories, because stories make sense out of the chaos of existence. In a story, like I say, every little element means something. In real life, sometimes things just happen. Somebody passes away and you say, wait a minute, 2 weeks ago he said this to me. He must have known something was going to happen. No, he just said that to you and had nothing to do with it, with what happened. Real life is very messy. Stories are very neat and controlled.
Interesting. Given that real life is so messy, when you create a controlled story, is the goal of that to sort of introduce some escapism, or do you want some real life aspects in stories so that people can take lessons away from it?
Well, I think every story you should be able to take lessons from, no matter how fantastic the story is. Most Spider-Man stories, when you come down to it, are stories about responsibility. Most Fantastic Four stories are stories about the importance of family and family ties. Most Iron Man stories are about, we can always strive and improve. It's all about improvement. There's better li living through technology. Captain America stories, I always think that people mistake Captain America for a patriotic hero. But what Captain America is, he believes in the essence of America, the can-do spirit, that somehow or other I'll find a way to deal with whatever problem I have. And finding a way with whatever problem you have, that's something everybody can take away with, because we all have problems. And we're constantly trying to find a way to deal with them all. Like I say, I think every story should tell us something about the human condition. Even a five-page Archie story, and I do a lot of Archie stories too. Yeah, they're jokes. Yeah, we're making fun of things, but at their essence, we're also, giving little morality plays.
Tom, given that you were living in it, were you like, has any of those lessons from these superheroes that you would create, you would write, sort of bring into your day to day where if, something bad happened, you would think, what would Captain America do? Was there a connection between your work and your life?
There's a deep connection between my work and my life, because, I believe that where there is life, there is always hope. And we all go through some very, horrible things. And whenever I was dealing with anything really horrible, I used to say to myself, you're still alive, just got to toughen up and get through this. And someday the sun will come out. That old Annie song, the sun will come out tomorrow. Tomorrow may be, 2 months away from here. But eventually that sun will come out. And I've taken the lessons of comic books. I firmly believe, I don't quite believe in heroes as I don't believe any politician is a hero. I don't believe any sports figure is a hero. But I believe we can all be heroic. and be our own heroes.
Tom, when I watch all these superhero movies, a bunch of different anime, all the good ones make it feel like I'm the main character. I relate with the main character, and I feel like in my own world, I'm the main character of my sort of universe. Do you think everyone feels that way when they're watching these amazing shows, and that just gives credit to how well it's been written, where everyone that watches it feels like they're the main character?
Well, I think that good writing draws you in, it grabs you by the throat and just yanks you through whatever it is. If it's a novel, if it's a comic book, if it's a movie, it just sucks you in, and you're there for the whole thing. And whether or not you're identifying with the character or not identifying, you're just sucked into that particular universe. And I think that happens, whether you're, watching a superhero movie or you're watching Oppenheimer. Quality storytelling gets to us all.
Tom, when you were working at Marvel Comics, were you just in charge of the comics, or did you also have decisions over merchandising, movies, licensings? I guess, what was your role at Marvel?
Well, my role is editor-in-chief, and my specific responsibility was to take care of the characters and to make sure that publishing made money. In the days when I was there, and this will be hard for people to grasp, we couldn't give our licenses away. We were a company that was kind of barely hanging on. Publishing was the main source of income. And I spent a lot of time with our television guys, our movie guys, trying to get another department to make money, because every once in a while the president come down and say, "Listen, we need to make an extra $100,000, or we're going to be in trouble next year." And I thought, "Wait a minute, why is it always on me? I want these other guys to make the money, then it won't be on me." So I did work, very closely. I remember one time I was talking to somebody who had the license to the Fantastic Four movie. And he said to me, "The trouble with the Fantastic Four movie is, by the time you tell the origin, the movie is half over." And I said, "Then don't tell the origin. What you do is under the credits, you show the origin in animation. And then, and you end the credits where it says the Fantastic Four and the four hands go down. We've seen them get hit by the cosmic rays. We see them get their powers, and then we can start the movie." And the producer said, "You just saved me $10 million." And I said, "Great. How about kicking some of that back?" He didn't, but and he ultimately didn't make the movie. But I said, you just got to be creative about these sort of things. I'm happy that the last couple of Spider-Man movies did not have to tell the origin of Spider-Man again. We don't ever have to see that again. I like the fact that now when they do a superhero movie, they just get right into the action, because that's what we're all interested in.
As like the editor in chief, were there any characters that you felt really responsible for, where if you did sell off the license, you wanted sort of creative control over how they portrayed it in the movie or the TV show? You really felt responsible for that character and you wanted it done right.
I felt responsible for all the characters. We wanted them all to be done right. And when I say done right, I'm always talking about the spirit of the character. Like I said, with Spider-Man, I wanted the stories to be about responsibility. With the X-Men, I wanted it to be about, prejudice and alienation and topics like that. The actual day-to-day stories and stuff like that, I figured that the TV guys should be able to do their television. They certainly didn't need me or want me to be telling them how to do their jobs.
Were there any movies or shows that you sort of played a part in?
I, well, often joke about the fact that I was involved with every Spider-Man movie except the ones that actually got made. I must have, commented or done, plots for about seven or eight Spider-Man movies, none of which got made. I was, involved with the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie, which, they only did that to keep the license alive. They never intended to release that movie. The budget for that movie was $1 million because it was cheaper to burn off $1 million making a movie they weren't going to release than it was to renegotiate, the license for Marvel. And I often look at that movie and think, that movie, $1 million, the people involved in it, it's a terrible movie, but the people involved, they got a lot more than $1 million on the film, on the screen. And around that time, there was a TV show called L.A. Law. I don't know if you ever heard of it. No special effects, nothing. It was a lawyer show. And the weekly budget for that film was $1.5 million. So just to give you a little perspective on how things.
Yeah, for a whole movie, like the budget was less than like a TV show episode.
Absolutely. And I've got friends who work on movies, and a friend of mine told me his craft services budget was a $2 million. So
I was going through some old clips of the initial Spider-Man trilogy with Tobey Maguire, and man, like wow, there's a certain feeling to it, the everything about it, where the new Marvel movies, they've sort of there's a spark that there's a stark difference, and I don't know what about that initial trilogy, but it's just so nostalgic every time I see Aunt May, Tobey Maguire, the hardship that he goes through. It's such a beautiful trilogy, and I could watch it over and over again.
because you saw it when you were younger, and you
Yes.
have a nostalgic feeling about it. The golden age of comics is whenever you personally started, because those comics, and I don't know what era you started reading comics, but those are the comics where everything was brand new to you, and everything you're seeing for the first time. And I think, people lose sight of the fact that, people at different ages have different comics that they love.
That's so true. What's happening with Marvel Comics nowadays, when I'm looking at Marvel Studios, they're doing like so many movies, TV shows, there's so many different timelines, there's amazing Avengers. What's happening in the comic books sector?
I really can't speak to that too much. I recently did a four-issue limited series for Marvel, connected to an old series that I worked on 40 years ago, called Secret Wars. It's called Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars Battle World. What a mouthful. And I think the first issue comes out around Thanksgiving. I know that comic book sales are down these days. You would think that with all the movies, they'd be, skyrocketing. But the comics are aimed for a more adult audience, which, I think is a mistake. A lot of the comic books to me are more like radio scripts because they don't have a lot of action, a lot of visual storytelling, that sort of thing. And the stories, run on for six or 12 issues. I think comic books, have to have a sense. When you buy one comic book, there should be a feeling of completeness there. Should be a complete unit of entertainment. Whatever you're buying, if you're buying a novel, it should be a complete unit of entertainment. If you're going to a movie, it should be a complete unit of entertainment. The last Mission Impossible movie was part one, but you got a complete unit of entertainment. The last Spider-Verse movie was part one, but you did not get a complete unit of entertainment. So I walked out of that Spider-Man, Spider-Verse, and I love those the two Spider-Verse movies. I think that is the first Spider-Verse movie, I think, was the best Spider-Man movie of all the Spider-Man movies. The second one, fabulous acting, fabulous animation. It had me on the edge of my seat, but I walked out of there dissatisfied because it ended on a cliffhanger. And I think we need that complete unit of entertainment. We have to have that sense of satisfaction at the end. Even if the story ends sadly, we have to have that sense of satisfaction at the end. That's, I'm an old fart and I think like an old fart.
Do you follow anime or manga by any chance, Tom?
Not really. Followed a couple of series. Certain things, I like more of the classic stuff, the Gold 13, I'm probably mispronouncing it. Lupin 3, some of that stuff. But I'm not a big manga person or anime person. To each his own. I've got novels to read.
Tom, what's your favorite superhero movie of all time? And I guess I'm really curious, what's your favorite Marvel movie, superhero movie in general, and I guess even your favorite movie in general?
Well, my favorite movie in general comes down to either Casablanca, which is an old film, or Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein, another old film. My favorite superhero movie, I like, I like the first Spider-Verse movie. I like the Fantastic Four and the Silver Surfer. The first Transformers film I thought was terrific. The Captain America films, the first Avengers film. I don't know what my first one is. It, on any given day, I'm looking at these things saying, "Wow, yeah, I don't know which one it is." I'm hoping that my favorite film will be The Marvels, because that looks like it's a lot of fun, and a couple of friends of mine have seen it, and they all told me it's a lot of fun.
I recently just finished re-watching Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. Just finished the last third movie yesterday, and it's like that also had a like I re-watched it, and man, like that Christopher Nolan did an amazing job.
He did do an amazing job. I liked most of the first one. I think towards the end, it just got very confusing. The second one, I liked, parts of it and not so much other parts. And I thought, wait a minute, the beginning of the movie, Batman is wanted by the police. At the end of the movie, Batman is wanted by the police. I didn't have to see this movie, nothing changed. And the third movie I thought was a mess. That's just my opinion, and I look, I love the actors, and I think Christopher Nolan is just an incredible director. But I thought that film, I know he deliberately wanted us not to be able to understand Bane, but I think it's a mistake. If an actor is talking, I want to hear what he's saying, because otherwise he shouldn't be talking. But, I loved Oppenheimer. Well, Oppenheimer is a hard film to love. I was entranced by Oppenheimer, but there were sections there where the music overpowered the dialogue. And, I want to hear what they're saying, because if what they're saying is meaningless, why are they talking? That's the writer in me.
Interesting. What's your thoughts on the most recent Marvel videos, movies in the last 5 years? Like I've watching them and they're really quick pace. It feels like we're sort of in that attention economy where it's like I've watched The Godfather and that's a very slow burn of a movie. And these recent Marvel movies are the complete opposite. It's like you're sprinting through the 2.5 hours.
Yeah, some of them worked and some of them didn't work. The last Thor movie, some of the humor I thought was terrific. Some of it I thought was ridiculous. Thor talking to his hammer as if it's a real thing. Come on, come on. And I think they couldn't figure out, is this a comedy film or is this a dramatic film? Because, Jane Foster dying of cancer seems to be pretty dramatic to me, and it shouldn't be wrapped around with all the comedy. A little girl gets the power of Thor, and her stuffed bunnies start shooting laser beams. That's kind of funny. They didn't belong in the same film. They should have focused on it. I really liked the first two Ant-Man films. They were caper films. And the third one to me was suddenly Star Wars. And it just didn't fit in with the characters. All the things I liked about Ant-Man was not in the last Ant-Man film. I was disappointed. But these are just the ramblings of one guy. I don't know if my opinion means anything on that stuff. Overall, I think they're doing a fabulous job with the films. Most of the TV shows I've seen have been terrific. I really like the Falcon and the Winter Warrior. Hawkeye and She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel. I think these things were terrific. The first season of Loki, I've not seen the second season yet. Really good stuff. So I just applaud what they're doing.
If I look back at all the Marvel movies, I've rewatched not many of them, but I've rewatched Infinity Wars. I was a big fan of the Avengers, the part one, part two of Infinity Wars. I haven't rewatched the original Avengers, but Infinity Wars, it felt like there was a lot of payoff. It was really sad where, the characters died in the end. What's your opinion on Infinity
Oh,
Wars?
I thought those two were fabulous films. And again, you've got a part one and part two. Now, the Infinity Wars, you've got a complete unit of entertainment. We were disappointed with the ending, but we got an ending. Endgame, completely separate film. Towards the end where everybody in the kitchen sink got involved with a final battle. Okay, got a little much, but again, a terrific film. And I also go back to the first Avengers film. I just love the interplay with Captain America and Iron Man, where at first they're arguing with each other, and Captain America says, "Iron Man, put on the suit, put on the suit." Suddenly, there's a problem, and then he turns and says, "Put on the suit," and so much of that was just really great characterization. Like I say, I like it. And the first Iron Man movie, that is one terrific film. So, I'm a fan of this stuff. I want to be a fan of the DC movies too. But it's harder.
What do you think DC's missing out on? Like, are they not just getting the right writers? Are they not getting the right directors? Like, how have Marvel just been able to just like just rock it up and DC's still trying to figure it out?
I think DC did not follow the Marvel formula. First off, they did the Justice League movie too soon. You should have introduced the characters the way Marvel did. Slowly introduce the characters and then do a movie where they get together. I think, I don't know, because I've saw the three Suicide, is it three Suicide Squad films, and the last one had some good stuff in it, but at the end didn't really work for me either. The Flash film, I think, was a mess, and I know a lot of fans love the end where you're seeing all these different universes and that sort of stuff, but I'm tired of the multiverse. I don't think we need that anymore. That come on, guys. Different writers handle the characters different ways. Okay, we accept this, let's move on. Let's tell new stories, not repeat the old ones, because that's why people hire us, to tell something new.
Tom, how do you go about telling new stories or recreating the universe once you've gone down that deep? Like, for example, now Marvel has all these different TV shows, all these different multiverses, all these different timelines. Like, same as you when you had all the different comics and all the different characters, eventually it gets to a point where you just want to restart. How do you even restart?
Well, I don't think you do have to restart. I'm not, I hate the fact that every year or so there's a new Spider-Man number one and that sort of stuff. I think that if you really get deeply involved with the character, you find an unlimited source of stories. I was on a comic book called Spider-Girl for 13 years. I could have done another 13 years with it and keep coming up with new things. I was on Thor, I think, for 7 years. And again, could have stayed on there for, at least another seven more, probably another 21 more. If you really get into a character and you're a creative person, there is unlimited story potential there. I am always befuddled when someone says, "Well, I'm working on Superman, and what can you do with Superman?" And I always say, "What can't you do with Superman?" And they say, "Well, he's so powerful, you can't come up with new villains for him." I'm thinking, "Of course you can. Just be creative. You're creating the villains. So you create villains that are more powerful than Superman. Just use your brain. Come on." And it's easy for me to say. I've only done like a half a dozen Superman stories.
I would understand how, like, in a setting like Family Guy or Simpsons, where there isn't a canonical sort of storyline, they can have unlimited stories. But with something that's more chronological, let's say Thor, his mum dies, his dad dies, he joins the Avenger, he one of his home his Asgard gets blown up, and he defeats one of the strongest enemies in the universe. Doesn't it get to a point where, like, now there's just so much sort of backlog that you can't create something new? Or he grows older
No,
and dies?
you can keep coming up with new stuff. I mean, that's our job. We're supposed to be idea factories and come up with new stuff. I don't know how many, seasons of The Simpsons there have been. I think it's like 35 years Simpsons has been on, and they can come up with new stories. Of course, we can come up with new stories for Thor. Of course, we can come up with new stories for Spider-Man. And if you can't, you're in the wrong business. Anybody, I've had guys say to me, I just don't have any more ideas. I said, okay, then you're done. If the characters, have legs, there are unlimited stories to the characters. You just have to be true to the character. I mean, Archie, they've been doing Archie stories for since I think it was 1942 or something like that. And they still come out with new Archie stories that are different from the other Archie stories because people are true to the character.
And when you create new stories, do you take into account all the past history of that character? Like, let's say it lost his arm, so now he has to have one less arm for the new stories, or do you just refresh it and take the time back?
What I do is if I'm going to take over a character, I go to his earliest appearances, so that I get a sense of what the series is supposed to be about. And then I check maybe the last two, maybe two, 3 years of material, so I know where his life is now. And then I just move forward from that. And I think it's our job as creative people to constantly move forward. A lot of writers, they look at past stories and they want to straighten out this bit of continuity or that bit of continuity. And I think, who cares about that stuff? Move forward, create new exciting stories, new scenarios. Our world is constantly changing. There's new stuff happening every day in our world. Let our characters, interact with that. I mean, there are so many times I wish the world was a little bit more boring because sometimes it's a little too scary because too many crazy things are happening.
Tom, when you write a sort of an issue, a magazine, a comic, is there a formula that you follow? Do you follow like the hero's journey that, the Star Wars follows? Is there like a journey or template or formula?
Not really. A lot of times I'm not sure what the story is about. And I just start writing a bunch of notes that are practically in gib, you know, they're practically gibberish. And I keep on writing until suddenly a story begins to form. And then I go back and I throw out everything that doesn't fit the theme of that story. And I work out the structure of what the real story is, what the meaning of the story is, what we're really talking about here. And then I structure it so that almost every page ends on a cliffhanger, because I want you to keep turning the pages. Somehow it all comes together.
Prior to the sort of finished comic storyboard, do you start by just writing out a script? Does it look like an actual script that's just all text and then that gets converted to a storyboard?
It depends. There are three ways of doing comic books. There's the old Marvel style of plot and script, where the writer comes up with a plot, types up a plot. Spider-Man is traveling through the city. Suddenly a building explodes in front of him. Alien ship comes down, blah, 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 blah. I think that's the best way to do action adventure stories. And I work very closely. I mentioned an artist by the name of Ron Frenz, and he and I usually talk about what the story is and talk about the characters a lot, even before I sit down to write. The other way is a full script, where and that's kind of like almost like a movie thing. Break it down into pages and panels. Page one, panel one. This is the action. And then you put the dialogue underneath it. So you're telling the artist what to draw every panel. That works, I think, well with humor comics. I don't think it, I know most adventure writers are doing that these days. I like the Marvel style better because I think it becomes more visual to the story. And then the third way is a storyboard, where you have to sketch out the scenes. And when I started at Archie Comics 50 plus years ago, everything was storyboards. I couldn't draw. So I used to do stick figure things of the Archie characters. And I like a lot of slapstick, a lot of action. So sometimes my stick figures were just terrible interpretations. But luckily, I had great artists who could interpret the stuff. And it depends on what you're doing. The last thing I did for Marvel was a full script. And the thing I did before that was a plot and script. And who knows if I'm ever going to do anything else.
Tom, what's your main focus nowadays? What do you enjoy doing? Yeah, what do you focus on now? Retired.
Well, I consider myself semi-retired because I only work till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I take weekends off, which is different from what I used to work 12 to 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, like I said, I'm practically retired these days. And I do, the occasional comic book stories, short stories, and other things. I'm a very lucky guy. I've worked in pretty much every form of media out there, and like I say, I'm a very lucky guy. These days, I turn down more assignments than I actually accept.
Interesting. So you're still working like 9 to 3 every day. Are you sort of working on assignments that are assigned? Do you have side projects? Like how do you decide what you do each day as a writer?
Yeah, the work dictates what you do each day. If you're working on let's say, a novel or even a short story, you wake up and you're still part of that world, and you jump into that world again. And then come 3 o'clock, you try to get yourself away from it. Sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. Back in the day, when I had a lot of deadlines, I used to lay all my deadlines on the floor, on the wall, near my desk, and would look down and see the order that things would do. These days, I have a calendar that explains things to me, but most of the time I beat the deadlines anyway, so I don't care. I've always been afraid of deadlines.
Tom, if you had two different stories, one had a deadline on the 15th, one had a deadline on the 20th, It's the first of the month. Are you chipping at both stories every day, or are you trying to finish the first one as quick as possible and then look into the second one?
It all depends, because sometimes you start working on that first one, and then you slam into a wall. Think, oh man, I just dropped the character into a hole. How do I get him out of that hole? Thing now, now a lot of times when I do that, I vacuum or do laundry, or take a walk, and sometimes you go, yeah, I don't know what to do. I'm going to work on the other story for a while. And then you come back and you go, oh, I know how to get him out of it. Why didn't I see that, earlier? And you just go back and forth until everything's done.
Tom, when you're working 10, 15-hour days back in your prime, like, did you ever go through burnout, lack of motivations? Were there days that you woke up and you just didn't want to pick up the pen and you were like, I'm sick of this. This felt so mundane. What am I doing with my
Many times.
life?
Many times. There were many times where I said to myself, I'm going to finish this job and this is the last. I can't tell you how many last jobs I've done. Every once in a while, I'm talking to my friend and say, yeah, I think I've done my last job for Marvel. And he says, you tell me this every time you do a job for Marvel. And, there was one time I finished the job and then I had a typewriter and I took the typewriter downstairs and I threw it in the garbage because I thought I'm done. And that lasted for a whole day. I'm glad I got it out of the garbage before the garbage men came. There are times where it's fun to be a writer, and there are times where it's miserable to be a writer.
Tom, similar to like singers and authors of novels, do comic book writers own rights or get sort of royalties for the comic books they release, or are they like contracted by the publishing companies like Marvel? And they just get paid a set fee.
Well, you get paid a basic fee, and then if it sells over a certain amount, you get royalties. And if you've created characters, they give you a piece of the merchandising and a piece of the movies and that sort of stuff. That's why I'm waiting for the big Peter Parker Spider-Ham movie because I'll make a lot of money from that one. Yeah, the companies, sh share the wealth. The big companies share the wealth. I don't know what the smaller companies, not so much, but the smaller companies don't have that much wealth to begin with. These days, a lot of people, when they create a new character, they just put it on Kickstarter, and this way they own everything. And if the character goes over well, they make a lot of money, and if it doesn't, they make no money. Take your chances.
What was your interaction like with Stan Lee? Did you sort of talk to him often? What was Stan Lee like in person?
The Stan Lee you saw, the personable guy you saw in the movies, that was Stan Lee.
Wow.
Stan was not a great actor. He was just playing himself. I know he'd be furious from saying that. Stan was really, he was a very sweet guy. If you want to know who Stan Lee was, look at Peter Parker, look at J. Jonah Jameson, look at Flash Thompson, look at Aunt May. They were all Stan Lee. I remember one time saying to Stan, yeah, there's so much Aunt May in you. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I said, Stan, you are Aunt May. And he goes, don't be ridiculous. And we're walking outside. He goes, is that coat warm enough? It looks like it could be rain. Did you have an umbrella? And I go, turn, Aunt May. Because Stan was his characters. He was the thing. He was Reed Richards. He was Sue Storm. He was all the characters show us different facets of Stan Lee. And that's why when people say, Jack Kirby created everything, yeah, then how come I see so much Stan Lee in? And I don't want to take anything away from Jack Kirby because Jack Kirby was a major creator. He certainly defined the look of Marvel Comics and the feel of Marvel Comics and the plotting of Marvel Comics. But Stan Lee had a lot of stuff to do with it. I know people these days say, A lot of people say, I never saw Stan Lee actually write anything. I've been working with my buddy Ron Frenz for close to 40 years. And I said to him, Ron, have you ever seen me write, actually sit down and write anything? And Ron goes, no. He says, have you ever seen me, I've seen Ron draw sketches at conventions and that sort of stuff. But I don't think I've ever seen him actually sit down and draw one of the comic books we're working on. Because what we do, we do it in solitude.
I would hear stories about how Walt Disney would be, even well into his sort of senior years, he'd be reviewing a Mickey Mouse drawing and adding his final touches to it. And he was very involved in every aspect of Mickey Mouse and the whole Disney franchise. What was Stanley like when it came to his own Marvel franchise?
When Stanley would come into the office, we had a wall of covers. He'd always look past the covers, and he'd make comments about the different covers. He wasn't trying to tell me how to do the job or anything, but he'd look and he'd go, shouldn't Captain America be more handsome? Shouldn't this be here? Oh, this is really nice. I like the way the and I would always learn so much from Stan's, off comments. And Stan was a constant idea factory. In the course of 10, 15 minutes, Stan would rattle off 100 ideas, and maybe 60 of them you've heard before. And you say, okay, forget about that. That's nonsense. And maybe another 20 you'd say, okay, I've seen people do something like that. And then you get around the last 10 and you're looking and going, yeah, this could be really interesting. And I used to say, the company should hire somebody to walk around behind Stan and just write down all of his ideas, because whatever you're paying that guy in a salary to take that dictation, you're going to get back 10,000 fold. Because, like I say, Stan was a total idea factory. I know some very creative writers, some very creative people. Nobody came up with ideas the way Stan did.
What was Stan's sort of role at the company when you were there? Was he like a creative? Was he a businessman? Like when the head office came to you, was like, "Hey Tom, we need to make an extra 100K this year." Was it Stan telling you that?
No, Stan was in. I was based in New York. Stan was based in California. Stan was essentially working for the animation studio and trying to get our foot in the door to sell movies. And because he was Stan Lee, every movie producer wanted to meet him. So he got his feet in a lot of doors, and he helped out the animation studio tremendously. I would as often as I could, I would con him into writing a comic book, a graphic novel, a this or that. One of the first things I conned him into doing, it was a Spider-Man annual. J. Jonah Jameson was going to get married, so I did the plot, and we conned Stan into writing the script. And time and again, Stan would call me up and said, "Oh, they want me to write this comic book, but I don't have time to plot the story, work out." I said, "Don't worry about it, Stan. I'll work out the story. You just write the dialogue." And he was always great with that. He was a real pleasure to deal with, and there were some times, like I said, I had some bad times, and Stan always was there for me, and I always appreciated it. He really was a great guy, and he had the worst memory in comics. I have the second worst, but he had the worst, because so many times we'd be walking around and he'd say, what's that guy's name? I remember one time I arranged a meeting with him and Steve Ditko. They hadn't seen each other in years, and they were both very happy to see each other, and they embraced and that sort of stuff. And as we're walking around after the meeting, Stan turns to me and says, "Tommy, why did Steve ever leave Spider-Man?" And I said, "Stan, I was in high school at the time. Heck, what I know." But he really he was a great guy, a great guy. He could he could annoy you on occasion, but you knew that this was really a guy who he just had a magical power that whenever Stan talked to you, he made you feel like you were the most important person in his world at that time.
That's so beautiful. Tom, as a writer, what keeps you going? Like, what's your why as a writer? Is the goal to create a character that can go mainstream and see that baby sort of get viewed by everyone around you? What keeps you going, or what keeps you motivated till this day?
I wish I could answer that question, but what keeps me writing is hey, what if? And then I have to sit down and figure out what if. I was talking to some students at one point, and they said, how do you get ideas for stories? And he says, it's stories are, stories are all around us. And I said, look out the window. You see a leaf falling from a tree. And you ask yourself, what if that were a body? And the students looked and said, oh, yeah. And then that night I'm thinking, what if it was a body? Where did it come from? What if? And I had to write that short story. Now I'm trying to sell it. And I realized, when I started out, there were hundreds of magazines where you could sell stories like that. These days, there aren't that many. But someday it'll see print because it's done now.
Tom, you said at the beginning of the interview you talked about, the birth and death of superheroes. Right now, I guess superheroes are massive. Everyone's into superheroes. Is it gonna die out and then no one's gonna, like, everyone will be sick of superheroes? Is that how it's happened in the past? What did you mean by that?
Superheroes came out around the time of the Second World War. And after the war was over, people lost interest in superheroes. And then they, briefly flourished in the 50s. And then people lost interest. And then they came back in the 60s. And they've been going. Will people eventually get tired of superheroes? Maybe. Maybe not. Who knows? People thought that, action movies like the kind that Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, they thought people are going to eventually get tired of that. Will they? Maybe, not yet, but maybe. Will people get tired of superhero movies? Maybe, not yet, but maybe. Whenever a superhero movie doesn't do great numbers on opening day, everybody says, oh, there's superhero fatigue. People are tired of superheroes. And I'm thinking, no, they're just tired of bad superhero films. You do a good superhero film, and everybody's going to come. And, well, maybe not. The Blue Beetle, which is a DC film, I thought was pretty terrific. It did not, make great box office. But I think, once it gets on streaming, people are going to realize this is a really good film that they missed at the movies. I hear this Marvels is not doing all that well in the box office, but everybody's telling me it's a pretty good film. We'll see. I think that if you do a good film, people are going to come. You do a bad film, people are not going to come. I saw both versions of the Justice League film, and I thought they both were terrible. But that's just me. I thought Batman versus Superman was just a mess. And I wanted it. I want to like these films. That's why I pay my money, because I want to go and I want to enjoy this nonsense. Are people going to get tired of Fast and Furious movies? Maybe, maybe not. Mission Impossible movies? Maybe, maybe not. Tom Cruise won't be able to do them forever, but somebody else will. James Bond films, which we're all looking for the next James Bond film, whenever it comes out. And that's been going for what, since the 60s. So who knows? I think as long as you're doing quality stuff, people are going to come.
Interesting. I was going to ask, like, a lot of people, movies, shows seem to be the common medium of sort of consuming content and reading comics. seem to be on the decline. Is that so? Do you think people, like especially kids nowadays, having iPads, watching TikTok, that the medium that we consume is going to just move towards digital and like moving?
It could, but who knows? I think the comic medium will always be with us. The distribution system, maybe it'll all be digital at some point, and maybe it won't. I think that the medium is strong enough to withstand any form of distribution. I think the biggest trouble with comic books today is it just a matter of distribution. Where do you buy comic books? In Japan, you can buy them on every newsstand, and there are plenty of newsstands. In the United States, we don't have as many newsstands anymore. And most of them don't even carry comic books. If I was a public working in for one of the comic book companies these days, I'd be spending all my time working on distribution. But I don't want to work on distribution, so I'm not working for any of the comic book companies at this time. But somebody should be working on distribution. You solve the distribution problem, comic book sales will go up again.
Are you into collecting old magazines, old comic books? And given that you're in the space, do you get access to cool things?
I get access to cool things, but everybody gets access to cool things these days. I used to be a comic book, collector. I used to have a pretty extensive collection, and a little thing called Hurricane Sandy flooded my house and
No.
destroyed most of my collection. I'm also getting to the point where it's time to get rid of whatever I have because I just don't have the time to look at it anymore. But I still buy, books of comic book reprints and things like that. There's a publisher reprinting the old Black Hawk stories, which is a character you've probably never heard of, but guys my age, we love Black Hawk. I like the old classics, the Will Eisner, the Jack Cole Plastic Man, the Bob Powell comic books, all these great artists of yesteryear, Walt Kelly Pogo stuff. I love all that stuff. Whenever I get a chance to sit down and read, that's the kind of stuff I'm gravitating to.
Interesting. Have you gotten into like the collector side of things where you have it in those like plastic sleeves, the magazines are graded, or do you just have everything in a stack?
Mainly in stacks. I had to put whenever I was working on a title, I had to put things in sleeves and keep them in notebooks so that if I forgot how to spell a character's name, I could find it easily. So I have the work that I've done, in the sleeves and in a closet somewhere. But for the most part, I'm more of a reader saver than a hardcore collector at this stage of my life. As my wife tells me, it's time to get rid of all this stuff because at some point we're going to downsize our house and move, and we don't want to have to take a lot of boxes with us. And I happen to agree with her.
A year ago, I was looking into sell art where you can sort of buy the drawings of all these old Disney films and it'll be each frame by frame and these you can get the original drawings. Are there such things when it comes to comic books where you can buy or find storyboards drawn by Stan Lee himself?
There's artwork on my wall, original artwork. Yes, you can buy the original artwork from any comic book being done today. The older it is, the more expensive it is. The old Jack Kirby stuff, very expensive. The recent Ron Frenz stuff, not expensive enough. So you can get, all sorts of original artwork.
Tom, do you have children or nephew or nieces? And given that you're in the space, did they just naturally have gotten into superheroes and Marvels and comics? Was that the case or not?
I had a bunch of nieces and nephews, and none of them became a hardcore comic book fan. So some of them have read comic books here and there, but no, they like the movies. Everybody likes the movies, and the Marvel movies are pretty good, so they should like them. I like the Marvel movies.
When Disney bought Marvel, did they also buy the publishing side of Marvel? And how has that changed things, if so?
That happened after I left, and I don't think there's been much change. I think Disney, for the most part, leaves Marvel alone because Marvel is doing pretty good. So,
That's good to hear.
yeah,
Tom.
and all the time I was editor in chief, none of the suits ever came down to discuss stories with us, and I doubt they're coming down these days.
What role does, editor in chief, I mean, like that publishing side of Marvel play in the bigger picture of Marvel as a whole? Does publishing play a big factor, or do these Marvel movies just write new stories from scratch?
I assume the Marvel movies write stories from scratch based on, old comic books, but I'm not there anymore, so I really can't tell you. I know that when I was there, it was my job to figure out what the company was going to be doing 6 months a year from now. Mark Gruenwald, who was my second in command, probably the most creative guy I've ever met, aside from Stan. He and I got together and worked out a 3-year plan. We're constantly figuring out what we're going to do 2 or 3 years from now because we were real publishers and we didn't want to get, caught by surprise.
Tom, if you were the editor in chief today, how would you get the youth, the teenagers, back into comic books and magazines? How would you attract that audience again?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think, one of the things I would be doing would be, complete units of entertainment, and no more 6-issue storylines and that sort of stuff. 1-issue, 2-issue stories, that sort of thing. I try to get, much more excitement into the books. These days, there are too many talking heads in the comic books, and get back into visual storytelling. And then I would be working with the sales department to try to get better chains of distribution, because I think it all comes down to distribution. You can't buy the comic books. They're not around. So we try to figure out ways to get them in front of people again. Because, one of the things I do, I don't know if you do this in Australia, but we have a Halloween here where the kids walk around trick-or-treating. I give out Archie comic book digests, and the kids are so excited, and I know some of them have never seen a comic book before, but they get it and they look at it and they go, wow. And they get very excited about it. And I know that if you put these things in front of people, they'll want to buy them, they'll want to read them. And distribution, distribution, distribution.
Was marketing and selling a new issue complicated? Like, when a new issue would come out, how would you market this one new Spider-Man sort of story, this complete story in one issue? How would you get it out there? Because I know with movies, billboards, advertisements, you see it at every bus stands. But what would you
Yeah,
do with a
we
comic?
didn't do much marketing in those days.
Yeah.
Our marketing consisted of doing an exciting comic book cover. A comic book cover that had an excitement, a lot of words on it to try to, hold your eye on the cover for a few minutes and ask you a bunch of questions that you could only find the answers if you opened up the comic book. Basically, I said every comic book cover should basically tell a reader your life will be incomplete forever unless you buy this comic book. These days they don't think like that.
Was there a person where his full-time job was just comic book covers, and that's all he did, just covers on its own?
Well, we had a John Romita Sr. who would look at the covers and make sure that they were artistically good, but no. Every individual editor was responsible for his cover.
That's beautiful. Tom, I guess now, what's your goal and focus for the next 6 months? Is it just still churning out new stories, new ideas you have written down, and just bringing ideas to light?
Yeah, that's all I do. That's it. I'm a storyteller, so I keep telling stories. Like I say, I'm a very lucky guy. I have many markets and I still keep busy. And also I like to goof off, especially during the football season. My New York Jets are a terrible team, but I watch them every week anyway. But I'm not fooled thinking they're ever going to make the playoffs again in my lifetime. But they're still fun.
Any sort of recent discoveries or things that you've done in the last few months that you've now implemented to your life?
Not really. Things I've implemented into my life, I've been doing, slowly over the years. Yeah, not in the last 2 months that I can think of. Somebody started, told me that you should put hot sauce on baked potatoes, and I've tried that. I don't know if I'm going to implement that.
Thank you so much for your time today, Tom. I had so much fun just like digging into the world of comics, magazines. I've learned so much, and you've definitely been in this space your whole life, and it's definitely, I could feel the passion from the screen. So I appreciate your time today.
All right. Well, thank you for inviting me, and I wish you the best of luck with your podcasts.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, where can the audience find more about you, follow along you on your journey, see what you're writing or what you're releasing? What's the best way for our audience to follow you, if any?
I'm not sure because I'm terrible when it comes to social media because I think that when I whenever I approach the computer, I should be working. I'm on Facebook, but I have been told I already have too many friends. Can't get any new friends. I do LinkedIn every once in a while when I remember to check it. I don't have my own website because, again, people always say you should push the brand, and I think I don't have time to push the brand. I got to work. I do go to, I am invited to comic book conventions, and I do go to those. I guess I'm a hard guy to get hold of, but you can always write to Marvel, and send real letters. I always say to anybody, if you want to talk to Marvel, send them a real letter, because an editor, in the course of one day, gets about 100 emails that he must answer. And in that same day, gets zero letters. So if you want to, attract an editor's attention, send them a letter. Because you'll probably be the only letter he gets that week, and he'll pay attention to it.
That's a beautiful tip.
And one thing I want to stress, if anybody wants to be a writer, and I can't stress this enough, is be a writer first. And a guy who does comics or writes short stories or does novels, let that be secondary. You want to have as many arrows in your quiver as possible. Because if you only do one thing, if that medium is strong, you're employed. If that medium, hits a bad skid, you're unemployed. And you want to be, if you're a storyteller, you want to keep telling stories, whether it's in comics, short stories, novels, television. Movies is a nightmare, on its own. Television can be a nightmare too, but a different kind of nightmare. You want to be able to tell your stories in a variety of media because, people need stories.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. Have you written any stories for movies or TVs in
I've
mind?
done a bunch of things, but this is about comics. I don't want to get into that stuff.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much, Tom. I love how sort of passionate you are about what you do. I can definitely feel that you're so grateful. You repeated it many times. You're grateful to have such an amazing job. And I love how you're so still into the space. You're watching all the new movies that come out, even long gone since you've worked with Marvel. So it's been a pleasure talking to you today.
All right. A pleasure talking to you too, Andy. I wish you the best of luck. Okay?
Thank you very much, Tom. This is another episode of the podcast. Hopefully, you guys got some value today. This was a very cool episode. And yeah, I'll see you guys next week. Peace.